Chapter 8, Kashyyyk. It took just over a week to travel from Alzok 3 to Kashyyyk. Not wanting to put the other man out for so long, Cal offered to take the bird some of the way on his own, but the Mandalorian simply assured him that it wasn't any trouble and said nothing more on the matter. They began their journey with all four of them settled in the cockpit of the Razor Crest. Once the navicomputer was set and they were sure they hadn't been followed, Cal sat back in the co-pilot's chair and attempted to meditate. But the whirring of the ship and the blue-white swirl of hyperspace lulled him to sleep within minutes. He woke up an hour later, disoriented, to the sound of the Mandalorian's low voice. "Those are the settings for the carbonite freezing chamber in the hold. Most ships this size don't have one. I had it installed. Careful, don't step on that." Cal cracked an eye just enough to see that the other man was out of his chair, kneeling by a jumble of levers and wires under the flight console. BD-1 was trotting around him, chirping happily as the Mandalorian showed him different modifications he'd made to his ship. Cal bit back a grin and gradually fell back into a doze. When Cal woke again, he felt much more rested. He rubbed at his sore neck. That's what he got for falling asleep slumped in a chair, and sat up stiffly. The Mandalorian wasn't in the cockpit. BD-1 was folded up in Cal's lap, recharging, and the Sheobird was asleep with its head tucked under its wing right behind his chair, a bowl of water on the floor near it. There was a nutrient bar resting by his head that hadn't been there before, and Cal tore into it eagerly. He hadn't eaten much, by his standards, since he left the Mantis 3 days ago. He should probably call Seer, but the thought of her ire in response to the situation he'd landed himself in dissuaded him from pursuing that. He'd call her from Kashyyyk. Cal hoped that his contacts on the planet remembered him. Otherwise, his arrival in a pre-imperial craft with a bounty hunter might arouse some attention, if not outright suspicion. Carefully, he lifted BD-1 from his lap and placed him in the chair, then left the cockpit and slid down the ladder into the hold. The Razor Crest was immaculately clean and maintained, but sparsely furnished, as Cal noticed before. The closest things to personal effects in clear view were the bounties frozen in carbonite, which never failed to send a chill down Cal's spine. The Mandalorian himself sat cross-legged on the floor, doing some rewiring behind a wall panel, his cape fanning out across him. He looked up when Cal approached and nodded at him, the dim interior lights sliding across the glossy surface of his helmet. "Thanks for letting me sleep, and for the food," Cal said, hating how tentative his voice sounded. Usually Cal could sense the general ebb and flow of a being's emotions through the Force, but the Mandalorian felt sealed off from him, as though the Beskar of his helmet hid his mind as well as his face. Everything he said to the man felt a bit like a shot into a nebula.
"We'll need to stop for supplies in a few days," the Mandalorian said, not addressing Cal's gratitude, as he reached into the wall and extracted a thick blue cable. "What does the bird eat?"
"Sleegs, I think." The shiny head turned to stare at him again. "I'm sure it'll be fine with whatever bugs we can find, though." Another nod, and a metallic clink as he replaced the coupler on the end of the cable. He leaned back towards the wall and rummaged around in it for a moment before there was a little crack of electricity, and the Mandalorian recoiled slightly.
"Dank for reek!"
The muffled curse seemed to come from the wall itself. Cal suppressed a laugh. Nothing like getting mildly electrocuted to make a guy seem less intimidating. "Need any help?"
"No,"
he grumbled, and Cal started to turn away.
"Wait, yes, sorry. If I feed this cable through, can you go over there?"
He pointed to another wall panel that had been removed a few feet away,
"and plug it into one of the empty sockets."
"Sure." The travelers fell into an easy routine aboard the ship. They slept in shifts, there being only one small cot available for sleeping. Cal used the privacy to meditate more than he actually slept, and the Mandalorian didn't seem to rest much at all. Though admittedly, if he ever fell asleep in the pilot's chair, Cal might not have noticed. He reminded Cal of the temple guards on Coruscant from his early childhood. They'd had silence and stillness down to an art. It was impressive, really. During the hours when they were both awake, Cal often found himself helping out with little housekeeping and mechanical tasks, particularly once the Mandalorian found out that Cal knew his way around a ship. Cal took it as a personal victory that he was trusted anywhere near the important systems, given the amount of love the man seemed to have for the Razor Crest.
"Where'd you learn to work on ships?" the Mandalorian asked abruptly on the third morning, while they were cleaning out the air recyclers and replacing their filters.
It was the first time the Mandalorian had initiated a conversation since their journey began. Cal nearly dropped the dusty filter he was holding.
On Bracca. I was a scrapper there for a few years, a long time ago.
Imperial ships, then?
Not always. They got all sorts. It was something to do.
Cal paused, his memories of the grimy, treacherous junkyards floating to the forefront of his mind. He hadn't thought about Bracca in years. He'd been glad to leave it behind, though the relief was tainted by Prof's death and the chaos that had ensued immediately after he'd left. He'd still been a child, practically, lost in more ways than one.
It was as good a place as any to stay under the radar.
Cal expected further questions, but the Mandalorian's T-visor simply watched him. He tried to imagine what expression might be under there, but came up empty.
That must be where you got a taste for ponchos.
That startled a laugh out of Cal.
Yeah, my namesake. Maybe it was.
I don't know your real name, so I had to make one up, the Mandalorian said with a shrug, looking down, slightly abashed.
How'd you know my real name isn't Jaro T'Pol? That's what I told Ranzar Malk.
You're not dumb enough to give your real name to a bunch of mercenaries.
No, Cal huffed another small laugh. I guess I'm not.
They worked silently for another half hour, Cal unable to banish a small bubble of pride from his chest in the wake of the longest, friendly, completely non-confrontational conversation he'd ever had with the Mandalorian. He wasn't sure why it was so exciting, but it was.
Cal Kestis, he said before he could talk himself out of it.
The Mandalorian looked at him under the recycler he was reinstalling in the ceiling.
That's my name.
Cal wasn't worried about his name being recognized. The Jedi were prominent figures, it was true, but the New Republic was, to say the very least, a bureaucratic nightmare. In any computer system from the Empire onward, Padawan Cal Kestis was listed as killed during the Purge, and Cal hadn't bothered rectifying that yet. It wasn't like he needed to open a bank account. Cal was a ghost, and being a ghost had many advantages.
Nice to finally meet you, Cal Kestis.
There was something almost teasing in his tone, barely detectable through the vocoder. The Mandalorian brushed the dust off his hands and held out one for Cal to shake. His grip was strong, and the worn leather of his gloves was softer than Cal had thought it would be.
The pleasure is all mine, I'm sure, Cal said with a grin and a slight bow.
In what Cal thought, in his humble opinion, was a passable impression of Master Kenobi's legendary charm.
Do I get to know your name as well?
No, the Mandalorian replied, then resolutely turned away towards the ladder into the cockpit.
But that time, Cal could definitely hear the smile in his voice.
Din passed over several more populated ports before bringing the Razor Crest down on a small remote moon for fuel and food. As they drew closer to the core and their destination, these low-traffic ports became less and less common, and Din's anxiety level gradually grew. He hadn't left the Outer Rim for nearly 2 decades, and he preferred to keep it that way, thank you very much. For all the lawlessness of Din's territory, at least he knew how things worked out there. He asked Poncho, Cal, to keep an eye on the ship while the owner of the hangar filled it up and went for supplies on his own. When he returned, the man was sitting on top of the portside engine, surveying the surrounding area as though it was completely normal to hang out on a ship's engine. As much as it pained Din to admit, he liked having someone else on his ship.
even if that someone spent an inordinate amount of time talking to his droid, communing in thoughtful silence with the wildlife they were transporting, and eating a ridiculous number of nutrient bars. Cal was a tranquil, good-spirited presence, despite Din knowing for a fact that he was not the most entertaining person to spend idle time with. Din had never had a real friend outside the tribe before. The thought was intimidating. Most of Din's friends wouldn't hesitate to kill him at the drop of a pauldron. He didn't even mind the droid, and that was disturbing. When Din approached the Razor Crest ramp, Cal looked down at him and grinned in the way that made the network of faint scars on his face contort subtly. And Din definitely did not have any thoughts about that. None at all. A day after their pit stop, Cal was perched in the co-pilot's chair next to the Mandalorian, fiddling absent-mindedly with the radio, when he suddenly found himself unable to keep quiet on something that had been bugging him. "I'm sorry," he blurted. The shiny helmet turned just slightly, not quite facing him. "About before, when I fixed your armor. You know, on Drexel, after the pirates?" Cal winced. "He knows. Get to the point." "I knew your armor was culturally significant, but I didn't know exactly what it meant until after. If I'd known, I would have left it alone. I promise, the breastplate was the only thing I messed with, even though I had a feeling you might be concussed." "My friend was surprised you didn't kill me," Cal added with a dry laugh when his words were met with no response. "Anyway, I'm sorry." "It's fine," the Mandalorian said at last, and Cal felt a little weight lift from his shoulders. "Thank you. I owe you one." "I'm not sure who owes what now, actually." "We can call it even." When they arrived in the atmosphere above Kashyyyk, Din was more than a little tense. It was a New Republic world, through and through. It wasn't a place for bounty hunters, or Mandalorians for that matter. There were reasons his people lived in the shadows. Almost as soon as they were in the atmosphere, a communications tower on the planet's surface hailed them. A Wookiee's voice growled through the channel. Din froze. "Do you understand Shriwook?" His companion grimaced. "A little. I'm rusty." "Do you mind if I..." Cal gestured at the controls, and Din hesitated. He didn't want to give up control of his ship, but something told him Cal might be better equipped to handle this situation. He got up from the pilot's chair and instantly questioned his own sanity. He tried to sit in the co-pilot's chair, but it just felt wrong. So instead, he hovered behind Cal and resisted the overwhelming impulse to pace. Cal was responding nervously to the Wookiee in basic. "I'm looking for Chieftain Tarful, if you could put me in touch with him?" More guttural sounds came through in reply, and Cal nodded vigorously, even though there was no holoprojection of him transmitting that the Wookiee would be able to see. "Yes, tell him it's Cal Kestis. He knows me. He helped me the last time I was here in search of information for the Rebellion." So, Cal had worked with the Rebellion. It didn't surprise Din at all. Many had, and Cal certainly hadn't come off as an Imperial sympathizer. In search of information, that sounded like a spy of some sort. Or some other reconnaissance job. Din didn't know enough about the Rebellion to say for sure. He'd been happy to see the Empire go as anyone else. But out as far as he worked, it didn't matter so much who was in charge. And bounty hunting was always in demand. Lost in thought, Din forgot to be anxious until he realized they were descending into the atmosphere near the planet's equator. Cal was talking to a different Wookiee now. This one's voice was gravelly with age. "We have a baby Shio bird that was stolen during the occupation. With your permission, I was hoping to return it to its home in the origin tree," Cal explained. There was another rush of growls and howls. "Thank you, Chieftain Tarful," Cal replied. They carried on for a few minutes, Din listening in the hope of picking up more tidbits from the man's past, but nothing more was revealed. When the Wookiee had disconnected, Cal glanced back at Din. "We have special clearance to land near the origin tree. There's nowhere to set a ship down once you get to the canopy, but we can get pretty close. I'll take the bird the rest of the way.
Cal flew the ship low over the clouds towards a lone mass in the distance, the layers of greenery below only just visible between the puffs of whiteness. As they grew closer, Din began to realize that it wasn't a mountain, as he'd originally thought, but a massive tree surrounded by a nest of raised earth. Its trunk was the width of a city, and its leafy top looked like it must be miles and miles in circumference. The roots tangled and stretched infinitely into the distance, dwarfing their surroundings. They landed in a clearing on one of the hills surrounding the origin tree. Cal guided the Shio bird out of the ship and onto the grass. The bird squawked and swooped into the air, looping around Cal, its wings stirring the mist around them into swirls of moisture. Din stayed in the doorway of his ship, taking in the spectacular view of the jungle around them and feeling the heat soak into his armor. The air smelled alive in a way that Din couldn't really compare to anything else. It was as though the planet itself was breathing. High above, the canopy of the origin tree was a rich, impenetrable green, beautiful and mysterious. Back on Alzok 3, Din remembered Cal saying that the bird would grow to be larger than a starship, but it was the scenery in front of him that made him believe it.
"Tarful invited us to his village for a meal if you want," Cal said after a few moments of silence, admiring their surroundings as well. "I'm going to stay a few days and relax. My people will pick me up here."
It was tempting, but Din didn't think he'd be able to relax until he was back in the Outer Rim. "Thank you, but I should be going." Din thought Cal looked the slightest bit disappointed at his choice, but the expression was gone in a blink.
"Then," Cal turned to face him fully and bowed his head, humble. "Thank you for your help returning the Shio bird to its kind. I couldn't have done it without you."
"This is the way," Din replied, because it was, more so than stealing an endangered animal and selling it for parts would have been anyway. This, whatever this was, had to have been worth any trouble on Din's part.
"You would have managed just fine without me."
Cal smiled, solemnity dissolving in response to the compliment.
"I'm sure we'll meet again," Cal said, and this time the prospect didn't sound so daunting to Din.
"I'm sure we will." As the Razor Crest coasted through the air and began its ascent through the atmosphere, Din caught a glimpse of a massive, long-necked shadow passing through the clouds below him. He thought, for a moment, that he might even have heard a low, bird-like call echoing across the treetops. Or maybe his engines just needed oil.